Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. Me, for the last time in 2 months.
That's right. Brock is simplifying the good life.
My name is Brock.
For the last time. It's complicated life from here on out, huh?
Yes.
And I'm Aaron Flores, the smartass of the show. Broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia. And I did that without reading.
Well done. We're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, bicycles, trains and transit, simple living,
and today,
and other things. What are we doing today?
A refreshing cup of cold water.
What could be simpler than cold water?
So good. So
I
the
guess
thing is
lukewarm water, because it would require no refrigeration.
But. Right. But it's not as refreshing.
Good point.
That's why I'm going for a mountain stream. That's the entire reason of this entire trip is me going out trying to find water coming out of a mountain somewhere.
And you'll come back and go, I have found it. I've found water.
The fountain of youth. Exactly. Going the other direction, speaking about hot water, I actually found a jet boil stove. Did I tell you about this yet?
Yeah, you texted me. You're like, we are never waiting more than 5 minutes for hot water or coffee ever again.
Because we had the issue with this amazingly versatile stove, the Whisperlite International, a fine product. We are not sponsored or affiliated with MSR. But after a couple years of using it a lot, I think maybe the insides got gunked up, and we had a hard time getting fuel from the bottle to the actual jet of the stove.
It got really finicky.
It did. So much so that, yeah, was it the last morning of our trip, or like the last morning before civilization?
No, it was the day we were biking into San Luis Obispo. Not San Luis Obispo, but, well,
Morro Bay,
and then eventually San Luis Obispo. Yeah, that morning, because, one, we were like all stressed out. We were out of water.
Yes.
And then what little water we had, we like wanted to save, but then we're also like, well, I kind of want some coffee.
We want oatmeal.
Yeah. And actually knowing, well, it was still kind of a ways to Morro Bay though, too. I was thinking, like, knowing how close we were to Morro Bay. But anyways, I was about to like conjecture something and I take it back. I take back what I didn't just say.
Okay. So everything stays the same.
Yes.
Excellent. But yeah, it was really kind of difficult. Like I think we were all kind of tired from the week. It had been a long however many days up until that point, coming to the end of the tour. And then in the morning, to not have clean water and then not be able to make breakfast right away and not be able to make coffee, which everybody likes coffee.
Yeah.
Just about.
No, it's true. Everybody does. And the people who claim that they don't, they just don't know that they really do like coffee.
Right. Or it's a problem and they avoid it because they know it does bad things for them.
This is also true.
Yeah. Nobody doesn't like coffee.
No. Coffee doesn't. Anyways.
Coffee doesn't not like coffee. Is that what you're going to say?
Something to that effect.
So anyways, now we have a jet boil, and I took it out of its package and tried it for the first time, and that thing is amazing.
Yeah.
No fireball, no wick to light, no complex fuel procedure. It's one of those cans of fuel, you know, the little short squat ones.
Yeah. What kind of fuel is this now?
It's a good question. I don't even know.
Because one of the things I really liked about the previous stove was that it was versatile.
Right. You could make a big ball of fire about the size of a soccer ball out of four different fuels.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not how it was supposed to go. Yeah.
No, and you would think that would heat up your water faster, but it doesn't.
Right. Well, it's the orange flame is bad. The blue flame is good. The blue flame was almost impossible, damn near impossible to get to at that point.
I got it on the first try, and
it
ruined me because then it set the bar too high for me.
I apologize for our Whisperlite stove. That was kind of a big deal. It didn't work
it's
as
cool.
well.
It's cool. But again, like it was versatile. Like it could use many different fuels. But anyways, so the jet boil, it only takes like its own kind of fuel, right?
Well, it's readily available at outdoor stores. It's the kind that you screw onto the stove itself, and then it that opens the passageway for the fuel and allows the fuel out to the stove so that it can burn. But this one has that, you know, that screw connection. So you screw the fuel into the stove, and there's an ignition switch. You push it, it sparks a little spark, which starts the flame. Like it's
that's it.
Literally as easy as opening the fuel stream, going, and bam, fire.
Wow.
And then like 30 seconds later, two cups of water are completely boiled.
Hey. Yeah. All right.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that.
All right.
Yeah. The only thing that it'll be an upgrade, I guess. Adele and I will need to get the fuel canister size that actually fits inside of the little water pitcher thing. Because the one that we got was too big to nest inside the stove itself.
Oh, okay.
But we'll find other things to put it. Like I'll put my socks in there or something.
Put your socks inside the stove?
The dirty ones. Just kidding. Not really. So, well, yeah.
You know, you're cooking anyways. Like it'll sterilize whatever you carry in there.
Yes. Yes. For the amount of plastic that there is on this Jetboil stove, the actual interior is kind of a metal surface. So,
okay.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
So you're not boiling it in plastic.
Right. Yeah. Well, I would assume you couldn't really do that.
You never know. A lot of those water boiling units, actually, like the water pots that you plug into the wall.
Oh, right.
A lot of those are plastic.
Those are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got that little heating element at the bottom, but the whole shell is
the enclosure is plastic. Yeah.
And then our friend David Hetty would often get after us for using one of the plastic ones.
Ah, yes. Yes. Yeah, well, I think metal is probably a better, and a clean canteen would also agree.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was about
Speaking of which, that's a great bottle you've got there.
Thank you. It's not exactly a clean canteen.
Oh, okay.
And it is
aluminum.
It's not an official Sprocket Podcast water bottle.
But it's as close as we can.
It's it used to be a $3 water bottle.
Yeah. And now it's a $10 water bottle.
Until I lost it. Yeah. Until I put this sticker on it. And now for three easy payments of $9.95, you
right.
two can have.
Yeah. We should say to anybody listening that wants stickers, doesn't have stickers yet, we'll mail them to you.
Yeah. Give us your address.
Yeah, and if especially for donors that we have not yet sent stickers to, like hook us up with your address if we don't have it yet, and we will send you stickers to stick on water bottles. You can upgrade the value of your water bottle right at home with this easy kit. Do it yourself.
This easy water bottle upgrade kit brought to you by the people who have told you about Simplicity.
That's right. Years. And Bike Punk.
And Bike Punk. That's right. They made the stickers.
Yeah, that and the Summer Postcard Club, which I mentioned last time. Just the idea that we're going to be out on the road. We're going to be seeing some beautiful things. And if you would like a postcard from the road, send me your address and I will mail you one. It's
as
easy as that. Or if you would like
a postcard from my house.
Oh, yeah.
Send me your address.
There we go. Easy enough. It's thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. So, yeah. I think that's all I was going to say about that.
All right.
Yeah. So, Aaron, how are you feeling about taking the reins for the summer?
I'm a little nervous.
Are you excited?
I'm actually a lot more excited about it than I was when we first started talking about it. Like, the closer it comes and having to do, like, the engineering-type duties for Ellie Tallheimer's interview, that really helped a lot.
And you did a great job, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Worked out like a charm.
Yeah. Editing might be a little bit slower.
It always is. We edit in real time.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Like before we sat down here, I was taking all the naughty words out of the X-Ray FM version of the show.
Yeah. We can't just write an algorithm.
No.
To recognize profanity.
No, well, you'd have to say like the words like all the different ways you might like shit and fuck and like all the various, not just the words themselves,
right,
but also the
right.
pronunciations of them and the inflections. So, yeah, one step at a time. But I think you'll do well.
Yeah,
I think
it'll be all right though. Just be patient with me, listeners. We'll get through this together.
Our listeners are nothing if not patient.
This is true. Yeah. We have great listeners.
For sure. Yeah. What happens here in town while I'm gone? I mean, I know that Petalpalooza.
Because you've never spent a summer in Portland, have you?
It's been a long time. Petalpalooza goes for another week after I leave.
So Petalpalooza, it's dragging on longer and longer every year.
Yeah. This is a good thing.
Yeah. No, I say that with I'm impressed.
Yes.
And I'm grateful because I'm going to miss a week of this as well.
Yeah.
There's also
the bike fair.
Yeah, the Multnomah County Bike Fair, but yeah. It's not a Multnomah County Bike Fair.
Yeah, they took out the Multnomah County Park because it's not actually owned or sponsored by the county. So,
right,
yeah.
Right. That usually marks the conclusion of Petalpalooza. I went last year and it was cool, but I don't know. I guess maybe I was already like rided out.
You'd already been riding bikes for so long.
And you're not really riding, you're just hanging out with like bike people.
Right.
You know.
And watching jousting, right? Which
and some contests of various kinds.
Yeah. Did they do the Derby the year you were there?
No.
Okay. I think that's what they called it, where like they keep shortening the width of the circuit.
Oh, foot down derby.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. They did. They did.
And the last person on a bike that has not yet touched the ground is the winner.
Yeah. Dan Kaufman entered with the disco trike.
Well, that seems like it would be a good idea in that contest.
They disqualified him right off the bat.
In the land of two wheels, the man with three wheels is king.
That's right.
Yeah.
What else happens? So, well, last summer, you know, I just mostly spent the summer laying low. I did as many Petalpalooza rides as possible. But then after that, just kind of laying low. And plus, I was really stuck with work, doing a lot of extra time there.
Right.
We were really shorthanded.
You put in your time.
Which
I guess you're doing that again this year.
I was going to say, it seems like the theme for me every summer.
Right. Well, you know what that means. Come like September or something, you should ride to Missoula.
Except I don't know if I want to do that in September. It's probably starting to get cold, like up on the passes around.
I wonder, because I know that in the Northwest, like at least on the west side of the Washington and Oregon states, I know that the September month is usually pretty nice. So I wonder what it's like, in the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah. So summer's not a whole lot of action for me anyways.
Right. As far as getting out of town?
No. I had my brother visit last year.
Oh, yeah.
My brother Dan.
And he's coming back.
Yeah, and he's coming back in August. So you guys will be around.
Yes.
That, right?
Yeah. So it sounds like we're going to do another show together.
It's entirely possible that we'll have Dan back. And you all are going to laugh at him, and he'll be so funny and charming.
You'll laugh. You'll cry.
Yes. Well, you'll only cry because you're laughing so hard. he's doing this. There's some kind of math symposium going on.
Really?
From the 6th through the 8th here.
Interesting.
And he is wanting to get into a doctorate program, and he figures this is a good way to make some contacts.
Sure.
And also visit his brother.
Talk about equations. Probabilities.
Probabilities and number theory. And
statistical analysis.
Yeah, he's more on the abstract end of the things of math and
like hypothetical numbers,
kind of or just the nature of numbers
that always amused me,
which is weird. Well, okay, yeah. For example, you know, the square root of one is I.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
I stands for imaginary. It's an imaginary number.
Oh, okay.
There is no real square root of one. However, if it wasn't for I, as a way to reconcile different equations or whatever, things like going to the moon would have been impossible.
Right.
And that's why we never landed on the moon, folks.
Because of imaginary numbers?
because we just made this shit up.
Depends on who
you
ask.
It was done on Disney Studios.
Yeah. Were you and I talking about the idea that we may have actually gone to the moon, but like we'd never actually got photos or stuff from the moon, like the video stuff?
Like that's all really done on the studios.
Right. So it doesn't mean we didn't go to the moon. It just means like their cameras. Yeah. I like that idea.
I've never heard of that before.
Well, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, when you go to space, you got to worry about how much your stuff weighs and I'm sure none of them were professional videographers. And you know how bad it is when a reel of film falls off of a big spool in gravity. So in zero gravity, how do you ever... Yeah, it just seems like taking an old camera from the 60s to the moon is a bad idea. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of right away is it's all like set up and self-contained to, you know, to the point where like all they're doing is pushing with their giant gloved fingers, like play and stop.
Right.
Or record and stop. I guess. But
yeah.
Yeah. No, good point. I have some experience with taking pictures, but you know, on the bicycle, like that's a moving object. It's not going terribly fast. It's not terribly shaky most times.
But you're still tough. You're focusing on moving the machine.
Right.
And then you
right.
have a secondary machine that you're also trying to operate.
In zero gravity where like everything moves as you're like trying to move it.
Right. Or maybe it moves you.
Or yeah. No, that's true. Like you go to like wrench down on a bolt or whatever and you end up like turning yourself instead of the bolt.
Talking about the nature of numbers and shit, man. That's crazy.
So anyways, welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where
That's
we
right.
talk about the moon conspiracy.
You know, speaking of Bikes in Space, there was that essay that...
Bikes in Space Volume 2 is coming, right?
It is, yes. I'm looking forward to this. Yeah. The first volume, which we sent to Mr. K down mm-hmm. in Florida.
I promise I'm going to email you. Actually, you'll have this email from me before you even listen to this episode. So.
Excellent. Mr. K, thanks you. I was thinking about... Oh, right. I believe there was a story about someone who had a bike shop in like a spaceship that would go between colonies on the moon and Mars and EO and that sort of thing. But it was like a plug for... No, it wasn't for drugs. It was for space terrorism or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So they were part of a some sort of collective, you know, and they were taking bikes to people, and the bike thing was good, but then they were also blowing things up. Anyways, if you'd like to read an awesome story about that, it's in Bikes in Space, Volume 1. And if you'd like to read an
From
awesome
LA
story
Blue
that's
Publishing.
Not that, Bikes in Space, Volume 2. Yeah, I'm
Which
looking forward
to
that.
Which is also LA Blue Publishing.
LA Blue Publishing. She does good work.
Yes.
Yeah. The thing I am looking forward to more than anything else.
That was like really, it was kind of cleansing, but it was also so.
You feel the toxins coming out of me as
yeah,
I did that?
Yeah.
No, Pedalpalooza is the time of year at which everyone stays up. And I haven't even done a lot of rides. But.
Yeah.
The lack of sleep.
No, here's what I noticed.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I don't get hungry so long as I'm like moving around.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think about it until like suddenly my body's like, hey, hello. We haven't had anything since breakfast this morning.
You got a metabolism down here. It's not going to feed itself.
Those muscles you're moving, that requires us to take in some things.
I cannot change the laws of physics,
like
Captain.
1:30 and what was it, Friday night? You know, after the Guthrie ride, I'm like chugging home, and I'm not even sure I'm going to make it home.
Right, right. No, I've had that feeling before. And it's interesting because sometimes it sneaks up on you and sometimes it doesn't. Most of the times that's happened to me have been on tour, and usually because we're in the middle of like somewhere where there's no food. You can't just go out and harvest something or buy a Cliff Bar or whatever.
Right.
And the bonk just kind of sneaks up on you. Other times you can feel yourself getting weaker as you go.
Yeah, but in the meantime, like during Pedalpalooza, anyways, you don't want to just peel off and like, it's so convenient that, you know, look, there's a Plaid Pantry. I can just peel off and go get it. But then, you know, you won't be able to catch up with the ride or there's that fear you won't be able to catch up with.
Right.
The ride.
And that's why you should have Bike Fun Finder on your iPhone.
This is true. And I do. And I don't utilize it.
That's
Sorry,
okay.
Guys.
I think I haven't looked at it in the past couple of days. I know that not all the rides are on there. Not everyone going on a Pedalpalooza ride is using Bike Fun Finder.
Okay.
But if you are there, you can add the ride that you are in. And that'll help people catch up. So
you don't even have to be the one running the ride.
No, I think you can just be like, hey, I am on this ride right now, and I am dropping this virtual electronic breadcrumb trail.
Right on.
And in this analogy, you are the pigeon that follows that breadcrumb trail from Plaid Pantry back to all your friends.
Ah.
So there must be like an old lady with a bag of breadcrumbs somewhere, I assume.
That poor old lady.
Yeah. Well, at least they're electronic.
There you go.
Yeah.
Not very healthy.
I'm not sure how that helps. Yeah. But that's the thing about a convenience store, right? Is that it's only convenient if you have the time.
Right. Right. Yeah. And when you have like, you know, just ride after ride after ride, you know, which happens because you don't ever want to miss a ride.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, and that's why Fool's tips for how to survive Pedalpalooza were so great, because he was like, you know, pack all your stuff. Just like
this is like for camping.
Go to freaking Costco or something and just buy like a crate of whatever it is you like and then pack it all on your bike and carry that around with you for 2 weeks.
Yeah. I was looking at it and I was thinking like that's like what I would take like on a weekend camp trip.
Yes.
So my initial thought was like, this is excessive. But then realizing later, like, actually, this is very smart.
Well, if you want to
carry this, all of this around.
Yeah, if you want to keep doing rides. And I got to go back and look at the calendar again. I think most rides happen later in the day, like towards, like, once people are
during
done
the week
work.
Especially.
Yeah.
Yeah, like today, I don't think there's any rides until 5.
However, there are people who take their, you know, some people only get 2 weeks of vacation a year or something like that. And those people will take those 2 weeks during Pedalpalooza.
There is a dude I met on the Guthrie ride who is up from D.C.
Uh-huh.
He came up for Pedalpalooza.
Really?
He took, this is his vacation. He took a vacation to Portland.
That's awesome.
And he wanted to go to Portland during Pedalpalooza.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And rented a bike from, Everybody's Bike Rental.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We should talk to them someday. Because as I understand, it's not, I don't think they have a bunch of new bikes. I think they just
I think they're all like rebuilds.
I don't want to call it a cobbled together fleet because that makes it sound shoddy, but it's like they just found bikes that were around and available and fixed them up and made them work well, and then they rent them out.
Yeah.
Which is a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mental note made.
It's in there.
Excellent.
Yeah. What else is going on this summer? You know, I've got this tent that I'm not using.
Oh, right, yeah.
I need to get out more.
Yeah.
And I have Fridays and Saturdays off.
There we go. Well, it sounds like a call to anyone who lives in town.
Yeah.
To give you an excuse to go somewhere.
There you go.
Because you've said before that like you like to go camping, but you're not really into camping alone.
Not usually.
Yeah.
I even scared myself out of going to Stubbs Stewart, like the safest bike camp out there.
That's right, because you were going to do that.
You know, I'm still putting it on there.
That's all right.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to eventually do this. But yeah, I just talk myself out of things really easy.
Yeah, well, I think there was something else fun that was happening in town that night, as I recall. I think like there was another option that seemed equally viable. And
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
It's all good. But the point is, Mr. Flores needs people to take him camping.
I need friends. People.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope you get a chance to use that tent because it's nice to have something along those lines.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out, just remembering our trip from last year, because it was only about 2 weeks or so, but trying to remember what the rhythm of being on the road is even like, because this year has been so busy for me. I feel like I've always been doing something,
uh-huh.
And I don't have a whole lot of downtime. And we're going to be going out into the woods and... suddenly I will just be, it'll be me and my bike. And I think this might be the greatest contrast between home and bike trip that I've ever had.
Oh yeah.
Leaving town. I just feel, yeah, I don't even know where the time goes, you know, but like, I feel as though this year, I found things to do. Whereas years previous, I would sit around and watch Star Trek. I'm not even done yet,
good
but
point.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe I'll watch Star Trek on the road.
There you go.
But that doesn't sound
appealing. That's a good use of your time out in the woods.
What did you do out in the national parks? I watched Star Trek.
I finished up the Star Trek Pantheon.
Voyager. Yeah, the simple things that we have machines do for us, like washing your clothes or making food, or you hire somebody else to do for you. All of these are things that now I'll be doing on my own, which is cool. It's such a large and dramatic shift. I just haven't lived in the woods for a while, so it's going to feel good, I think, to kind of reacclimate to that.
Yeah, it's like slowing down, learning to slow down.
So. Yeah, and we are also, we're not going to have set destinations. Like, we're not planning on being anywhere at a particular time.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be helpful. We can actually maybe sleep in a little bit if we need to, catch up on sleep while being out in nature, which is going to be nice. I think the open-endedness of it is going to be kind of a pressure release.
Are you setting out to meet anybody? Like, I'm trying to think. I don't think you did this last year. Well, we kind of did it during our Big Sur. Like, we had Roger. Hey, Roger.
Oh, right. Yeah. You know, what's up, Roger?
How's your five chickens?
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, we had him lined up to hang out with him, talk with him. I'm trying to think if there were other people along the ride that we... But anyways, like, is there anybody that you're setting out to meet on this ride at all? Or?
Not specifically. I know there are people in different places. Obviously, my family in kind of Western Washington and Central Washington, I'll be dropping in. I have yet to call them and find out when they're going to be around and when we can come and visit them. But yeah, just in a general sense, kind of at the end of July, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there's John and Walla Walla, who we had thought about staying with when we were thinking we'd go to Missoula.
Right.
I don't know if we're going to get there or not. We might. It seems like a cool town.
Yeah.
And John seems like a cool guy. So we shall see. There's also some interesting characters that I think Russ and Laura put up a post on the Path Less Pedaled about the guy who runs a bus for bicyclists out to the John Day area.
Oh,
so
yeah?
It'd be kind of fun to talk to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm open to suggestions. I mean, if anybody knows anyone or lives somewhere along the way, we're definitely going to Thunder Island Brewing at one point or another.
I was about to ask if that was one of the destinations.
Yeah, okay. We couldn't do a trip without going through there.
True.
And drinking some fabulous beer. Yeah. The Scotch Porter is one of the best beers I have had. I like it a lot.
Was that one of the ones they brought with them?
Or that was
something you tried.
That's the first one I ever had back when they called it an ale, but then it was too dark, and so they changed it to a porter. it's really good. I'm a fan. So yeah, we'll probably go through there. I am curious about climate changes. I guess not like, you know, global climate change, but like the changing of seasons and months and temperatures.
Uh-huh.
We'll be going into high desert. It'll be drier. So I'll have to get used to that.
Okay. Are you, like, going to carry water?
Yes. Yes, we will.
We are bringing water bottles in.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know. At one point, I think this was while you were still planning on going across the country, so maybe not. But at one point, you were thinking of bringing, like, a collapsible, like, plastic water carrier.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I should probably look into that kind of an option.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have some large bladder to fill up and just carry around with us. I had thought about the Bob trailer at one point, like carrying, like,
just,
you know,
just being your water trailer.
Yeah, just being our water mule.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how much I want to carry, honestly. But we've also carried those purification tablets, which I think is a decent way to go, because then you can fill up when you get to a stream or something. You can iodine up, and then half an hour later, you've got your water set.
Right.
That's a good option,
and it's,
I think.
It's much lighter than, like, you know, carrying 5 gallons of water with you.
Yeah, for sure. You know? Well, that's the thing, is that most of the places we're going either are near water or not too far from water.
Right.
Somewhere.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the law is, so long as you're 100 yards from a stream in National Forest, you can camp anywhere.
That sounds about right. 100, 200, somewhere in there. Okay. They don't want you camping right on the banks and, like, you know, stumbling out of your tent to pee into the river in the middle of the night. I think that's probably the point.
Or even just leaving your camp waste there to get washed away in the river.
Yeah for sure. So I'm looking forward to that, being on the banks of rivers. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
Actually, sleeping...
Can that be 100 yards vertical? Like
into a tree?
Or, like, say, you know, the water is, like, on a cliff face.
Yeah.
You know? You're like, yeah, I'm a good, you know, 600 or 800 feet from the river.
Yeah. I think you were out of town when a listener sent us an article about the guy in San Francisco who climbed up into the tree canopy and then just stayed up there for 3 days?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
I would like to do something like that someday. I'm not super familiar with like climbing or trees or aerial acrobatics and whatnot, but it seems like a great idea.
I love to climb trees.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of heights, but I love to climb trees.
Well, there you go.
And
this is the great contradiction.
Yeah. Yes. I do contradict myself.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Thank you, Walt Whitman.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about climbing a tree. I guess it like, you know, calls back to some sort of like primate ancestry or something like that.
Sure.
Of being up in trees. Except, you know, because I'm afraid of heights, getting down is always really tough.
Okay. Because
I realize like, oh shit, I should not have gotten up this high. Now I've got vertigo.
Yes. Yeah. You don't usually climb with any sort of climbing gear, do you?
Trees, no.
No. And you're not an arborist, I suppose, either. No. So that it would not be part of your regular experience.
No.
I wonder if that would help, though.
Oh, like if I had some sort of harness or whatever, and be like, well, you know, worst comes to worst, I got this harness and I won't fall further than a half a foot or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Granted, I had never been like hundreds of feet up in the air.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the idea of, I think the article that this guy had written, and if you go back to, I believe it was the Rolling Oasis episode, I think I referenced this article. I think we have a link up to it, but it's just the idea that you would camp out, like urban camping is difficult. Number one, you don't really sleep in doorways and get away with it for long.
Right.
People will tell you to hustle along. And you can't really hide out in the bushes for too long in the parks. But if you go up into the tree canopy, no one looks up.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
That's how this guy just stayed up there virtually undetected and had almost a transcendent experience.
Just him and the pumas.
Mm-hmm, yeah, exactly. Yep. Watch out for that black fur. But I love this idea, and I'm curious what else there would be about that. It reminds me of when Adele and I were on our bicycle trip through Colorado. We went to Ouray, which is on the other side of the hill from Telluride, which is the better-known city. But kind of up there near the Continental Divide, beautiful areas. Ouray has a huge ice climbing scene in the winter, so I hear. But they have a kind of a ring trail that goes around the outside of town.
Uh-huh.
And so you can hike around basically around the entire edge of the city and look down at it and think, oh, it's so pretty. But we climbed up to this trail and camped out up there. And I imagine that's kind of what it would be like to camp out in a tree canopy or, you know, set up your hammock or whatever. Because we just looked down, saw the city, but we were at a distance where no one cared if we were sleeping there or not. So I'm kind of curious. Like, I feel like I need to do some experience here in Portland and see if I can find a way.
Just go climb one of the trees in Laurelhurst.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But yeah, dude, almost to do like an urban escape.
Yeah. Huh.
And to see it from a different perspective, a different angle.
Right. How cool would that be?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably not terribly legal. But
No. See, that's the thing. And of course, that's the reason we're only talking about this and not doing it.
We're talking about it as an idea, yes.
We would never ourselves violate the laws, nor would we encourage anyone to violate the laws. You've got to do what it is that the government's asking you to do, of course.
Right. Don't do drugs, kids.
But hypothetically, that's right. Hypothetically, it is possible to sleep in many places around town. So, yeah. Huh.
Yeah. So who was it? Was it the Zoroastrians? They would, like, as a form of prayer and meditation, like, some of them would, like, build these giant pillars and just sit on them.
Really?
Like, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You've never heard of this.
I have not.
Okay.
But, like, pole sitting, but thousands of years ago.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it wasn't like it was just, it was like a big tower.
Okay.
You know, this big solid tower that they would just sit on top of for, you know, days and days and days on end.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And when I was doing my silent retreat, there was something about being on top of other things.
Mm.
Like, you know, there wasn't any towers to go climb on top of and meditate.
But, right, right. The only ones would be cell and radio towers, and those are bad for you to climb on. Don't do that.
It's such a transcendental experience on the radio tower.
I would say, kids, don't do drugs, but
especially
do drugs
not
before you climb a radio tower. But don't do either one.
Right. No. I don't think there's a drug in existence that could get me up on one of those.
No, no.
Have you ever, this is, we're totally off on a tangent here.
Jungle Gym?
No. Have you ever actually seen, there's YouTube videos of people climbing radio towers.
Oh, I'd imagine they don't end well.
You know, on their helmet cam and they look down and there's, you know, the city is all tiny and everything. And you can like,
wow,
see like, and hear things like the wind going. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen a video where like somebody fell.
Okay.
I don't ever want to see that, but.
Cause I heard that the radiation was so intense that like you get really messed up if you try and climb an active radio tower.
Oh, I imagine. Yeah. Maybe these are all shut off.
Maybe so.
You know, at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't there, yeah, maybe this is urban legend, but yeah, there's stories of people who, you know, on their way up to the tower, like end up passing out from the radiation.
From radiation, yeah, exactly.
From radiation,
yeah,
poisoning,
yeah,
or whatever.
I've heard it happens occasionally. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know what substance is there. It would be interesting now that we've gone down this trail, this line of thought. We should put the call out for people who do climbing things. I'm especially interested in people who like integrate climbing into like some sort of simple travel. Either like, you know, hitchhiking from climbing spot to climbing spot or going on a bike tour with climbing as one of your primary objectives.
That is interesting because I always tend to think of climbing, especially in the mountaineering sense of the term or whatever, as more of, for lack of a better term, a more like bourgeois kind of endeavor.
Like it takes resources to get to the places where this is actually fun.
Yeah, it takes a lot of money to get up on a mountain. Like even Mount Hood.
Right.
You know, it takes a lot of time and money to
It can,
to
unless you take the Mountain Express, which runs from Sandy, Oregon up to Timberline.
Well,
Lodge.
Up to Timberline, yeah. But then, you know, to get up to the top, it's still, you know, it's a technical climb and
That's
you need
true.
Actual equipment and you need actual training.
Right. So you do have to.
That costs time and money.
Yes. Yeah. Rocky Butte has a great climbing wall.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of the sort of thing that if you know about it, you've heard it a million times. And if you didn't know about it, you might never have seen it. But
I might never have seen it then because I don't know about this.
Yeah. Rocky Butte, the park over, that's actually where X-Ray's Tower is.
Right.
Don't climb it, kids.
it's active right now.
it's a great sort of destination for a bike ride. It's a long, slow ride up. But you get to go up above the city and you get to see a great view of lots of it. Great view of the river, et cetera. But where the roads meet, I think, at that circular road for the park on the top, there is kind of a rock wall that you can kind of you can do climbing things on, which is the most generic way I could possibly title that. What do they call it? Rappelling, right? When you tie on top and then like back your way down using a rope and a carabiner.
Your
and
way
such.
Down is rappelling.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that once and it was pretty awesome. I feel like I'd like to do it again.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't have any of the stuff either.
We would have to, I don't know anybody who does.
Yeah.
Either.
But if that's your thing, you can bike there from anywhere in Portland.
Huh.
So yeah, I recommend that.
This reminds me, so my brother Tito was into rock climbing for a real long time.
Did he have the hand chalk and stuff?
Yes. Nice. Yeah, he did. And he had like climbing shoes, you know. I don't know if you've ever seen rock climbing shoes.
Well, they're really like reinforced toes, right? And lots of rubber on the end of your foot.
So yeah, they look like ballet shoes with a lot of rubber on the toe and on the bottom. But then there's like no like tread.
Uh-huh.
It's all just flat rubber, you know, which apparently grips better.
Yeah. The tread is the rock surface.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And
was he pretty
anyways,
good?
Anyways, I don't know. I mean... He never
Just
fell,
say yes.
And he's not dead. So,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Rock climbing is one of those sports where you're either Olympic athlete or you're stuff on the ground.
Right, right, yeah.
This was while we were living in Pittsburgh, and there's a lot of places to climb, but he's also, you know, a fairly careful person and a family man, so he also thinks of things like, I don't want to die and leave my wife with my kids.
Right.
There was this wall. It's not very high. At some park in Pittsburgh, and I can't remember the name of the park, but he would often go there. And rather than climbing up, he would climb laterally across. And it was like this big circle wall.
That's pretty awesome.
And apparently there was a lot of people that use that as training. because it was like chalk marks and stuff all over the wall as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and that sideways motion, you kind of feel like a gecko or something, I would imagine.
I guess, yeah.
Just kind of circling and looking at things from different viewpoints and different perspectives while staying around the same height.
Right, right.
Yeah, and the challenge of it, I think, it sounds like a lot of fun that you would be looking for footholds and handholds and everything. And the part that doesn't sound like fun is that...
Falling?
Yeah. If you mess up, you fall down. Well, I was thinking about... If you're a bicyclist, you're used to using your legs for a lot of things and pushing pretty hard with your legs. And as I understand in climbing, you're not supposed to try and like hoist yourself up by your arms because your arms aren't that strong. So if you use your legs, which are the stronger muscles, to move your body upwards, you use your hands and your arms to steady yourself as your legs are pushing you up. So,
That seems correct now that you say that, but it would be counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, and that's really the only time I did any significant rock climbing, or it was just on one of those constructed walls with the little handholds, but I used my arms almost primarily, and yikes, my arms were tired after that. So
speaking of arms, my wrist is still wrecked.
Yes, now remind me how that happened.
It was when I had my wonderful endo.
Ah, yes. Okay. You were downtown, went over the handlebars.
Week ago tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not quite back to normal.
No, it's not fun at all.
Is this the sort of thing?
Granted, I've been riding, these Pedalpalooza rides.
You had your hand on your handlebars a lot?
Yeah. Well, and I think even the single speed ride probably had a lot to do with, sort of exacerbating the injury just because... you're doing a lot of climbing on one gear. I'm not like going down to the granny gear. And so I would sit or hoist myself, up front over the front wheel.
Yeah.
Off the saddle.
A lot of pushing and pulling on the bars.
Yeah. So that probably didn't help. And then again, just being on the bike for so many rides.
Right.
Probably didn't help things.
I've been riding my tall bike a lot more than usual.
Yeah.
Partially because it's Pedalpalooza and partially because it's a great midday sort of get around when my regular bike is up at work. But I've noticed that at least one of my wrists is also kind of sore.
Oh, really?
Because of the, I think because...
The amount of play in the steering? Or?
I grab the handlebars when I swing up into the saddle, and I think maybe some of the angles are less fun. So I'm trying to watch my ergonomics as I mount the tall bike.
Yeah.
But the tall bike is not built for ergonomics.
Not necessarily. No.
I could use arrays in both saddles on both of my bikes. I think my regular one has been just kind of slipping down minusculely, minutely. So I was going to say pro tip, but I feel like that's such a stupid word. Pro tip, folks.
Real talk.
Yes. you could always stand to raise your saddle just a little bit because over time it does tend to sink down. So... It depends on how tightly you've ratcheted that that seat post of yours. But yes, mine has been sliding. And so I think it's just now at the point where I'm starting to feel my knees a bit more than I should because I need to get my ass higher. So,
okay.
Yeah. That's probably a good like quarterly reminder. We'll just put that out as a public service announcement every 3 months.
Right on.
Check your saddle height.
Check your saddle height.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's been a good show.
Yeah.
I think we're just about ready to close out.
Let's do this.
Before we go, I do have this this piece of mail that came in from Chris in Arcata.
Hey, Chris.
He says, I've picked up my first French press for brewing coffee. Enjoy the process at home of making coffee with this method. I'm not an everyday drinker, but enjoy a good cup a few times per week. I thought to myself, how about bikes and coffee? I enjoy bicycles, coffee, and the outdoors, so why not give it a whirl? And here are some photographs.
Oh, check it out.
Which we can link to this from our post on the internet.
Hey, Chris Chen and Kelly, whose last name I can't remember.
Coffee Kelly.
Coffee Kelly. Because her last name is Kelly and her first name is Coffee.
Yes, exactly.
We should forward this on to them. I bet they would enjoy this.
Totally, yeah. We've got photos of being at Arcata Marsh on a Sunday morning, and I believe yesterday was Monday as of this recording.
Yes.
And there was a coffee club early yesterday morning.
No!
But I didn't go.
Damn it!
because it was so early and I already have to get up so early. I think the time that they were starting to make coffee is the time I have to start just to leave my house to get to work on time. So it goes.
I keep missing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I told Kelly, like, if it's on a Friday, I'm totally going to show up. And then, like, it was pretty much that week I told her that, and it was on a Friday, and I didn't show up.
Yeah. One step at a time.
I'm sorry, Kellys.
It's okay. Both of the Kellys love our show. And maybe more Kellys besides. Is your name Kelly? Do you love the Sprocket Podcast? Call us, 503-849. No, I can't remember it. 503-894-4. It's okay. Well, this thing happening here, Chris's post is on his blog, CompleteStreetsAdvocate.org. And he's looking for folks who live near the Arcata area to go and drink coffee outdoors with. So get in touch with him. Yeah. Again, CompleteStreetsAdvocate.org. So that's him. I think that's just about it. Anything from you?
I got nothing.
All right. Well, let's call this a day. Right, call this a good time.
Hey.
And then I'll call my dispatcher and go back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my problem. Sorry about that.
No,
all right.
It's okay.
Here it comes.
I'm trying to get old show notes so I can get the correct ending.
Mm, good call.
Wait for it. Where'd you go? Okay. So I don't have the script technically here.
Oh, it's okay.
But you could find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Or you can call or text us at 503-847-9774.
That's what it was.
Yes. Our Twitter handle is sprocketpodcast. You can email us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com for whatever reason. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our music, for our intro and outro music. Thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. And thanks, as always, to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katrina Melengard, Roger Grigsby, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, and Justin Martin.
That's right.
Oh, my. So close.
I should go get some water real quick, actually.
We should both do that. We'll record the room.
Let people listen to Division Street for a while.
Actually, I had this idea as I was editing the podcast last night, to make a separate file of all of the dead air I edit out.
Oh, yeah. And just slap that together into a
slap it together into like some track somewhere.
Yeah.
Get some ferns in here. That's what we need.
Oh, yes.
You're going to need a bigger desk.
I know. I've been looking at pieces of furniture as I'm out and about looking at stores and free boxes and that sort of thing, trying to find...
I guess I'm not actively looking for something, but I would like to find maybe a larger table that we could install here. I don't know if that would work with the layout of the room or not, but...
Could we wall mount it?
Wall mount the table?
Yeah.
Maybe.
You know, because then you don't have the legs getting in the way.
Yeah, yeah.
If we can somehow support it against a couple studs.
Right. I do like the idea of having... Like maybe a table that everybody could sit around or something.
That would be cool too.
Yeah. And when I was in the X-ray studio, they had those fancy like boom mics with like the springs on them and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Hanging from the ceiling?
I think they were mounted to the table.
Oh, okay.
But they like come up from the table and then they come out. Yeah. You can like adjust them and yeah.
I bet if we got one of those tables from the library, you know, they've got like the cutouts for cables you know, power strips and stuff.
That would be really useful.
You know, just set that in the center.
And then we'd have cables for everybody.
And then, yeah.
And they'd be out of the way. It's exactly, a great idea. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
And no need for gaffer's tape.
We're doing
which
this.
Which is expensive.
Although I'm looking forward to using gaffer's tape.
Oh, never mind.
Here, let me do it then. A Sprocket Studios production.